If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
The wind is swirling about. Leaves are changing color on the trees.
It's true. No, they're not.
We got out our hoodie sweatshirts.
I wore a hoodie for the first time last night. Oh, it was so good.
For this CU podcast. Ian's excited.
I'm so happy.
He's jumping into my intro. This is the CU podcast for Tuesday, September 24th, 2019. That's hooded Ian Ferguson.
I mean, no hood today. But.
And I'm Pat Contra. Ian's had a stream of consciousness right now
yeah.
on the podcast. We'll be talking about on the show, we'll be talking about Steam games must be allowed to be resold, according to a French court. The Joy's Cube Kickstarter, Q&A topic, Apple Arcade. Not a huge amount more going on because Mario Kart Tour comes out literally tomorrow. We're talking about this. But first, Ian, we have less than 2 days left on the My Man t-shirt campaign. Go to teespring.com/my-man-cu podcast. And then you can get the mime. You can have Cyborg Guy, Pat, and Atlantean Ian.
Flowing
locks. Flowing locks. Orangey hair Ian on there. And yeah, and then we got a certain Super Nintendo guidebook. That's somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean right now. Don't know where. Wish I can call them. Hey, how's it going, guys? You need anything? Need some coffee? On the big cargo ships. I don't know how it works. They're just on the ocean somewhere. You can go to ultimatesnes.com for that. And the NES book is back in stock. And we'll be at PRGE October 19th and 20th.
Oh, yes.
In Portland, Oregon.
I'm excited.
The mecca of retro gaming. Go to retrogamingexpo.com. We'll be doing a CU podcast panel. I'll have a Pat the NES Punk panel on Sunday. And we'll have a booth.
And I'm going to play pinball until I drop.
I got half a mega booth for me and Ian. Ian, do you appreciate that?
Yeah.
You're welcome, Pat. You're welcome.
Okay, thanks.
What do you mean? You're welcome. It's a great booth.
I'll have to see it to believe.
Oh, he'll have to see it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what neighborhood it's in.
It's in the center of the action. Half a mega booth. You got the big guys.
Oh, sure. It's still the center. They've expanded the thing by 15,000.
We're not in the hallway somewhere. For the amount of money I paid, we're not. And we're going to have cool stuff there as well. We might have a new shirt. I shouldn't say that. We have another campaign going on. We might. And we might have a nice little pin. Enamel pin.
Enamel pins.
Yeah. And a certain Super Nintendo guidebook by the truckload we're going to have there. So Ian.
Sir.
You know, I was potentially going to be unverified on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It was very... My heart was palpitating at the time, if that's a verb. About it. So they sent out emails to everyone who was verified on YouTube. Said, we're writing to let you know we're updating the eligibility criteria for channel verification on YouTube. Unfortunately, with these changes, your channel no longer meets the criteria to be verified. We realize this might be disappointing, but we believe these updates will make channel verification more consistent for users and creators across YouTube. What's changing? They'll now proactively verify channels instead of accepting requests for verification badges. We aim to verify channels that represent a well-known or highly searched creator, artist, public figure, or company with a clear need to differentiate themselves from other channels with a similar name. Typically, verified channels have built a large audience and community on YouTube, are widely recognized outside of YouTube, and have a strong presence online, or have a channel name that could be confused with other channels on YouTube, blah, blah, blah. In early October, that means I'd no longer be verified. So everyone was in an uproar over this. I think for good reason. Because this is a change that affects a lot of creators. And on the surface, it's like, well, who cares? You get a check mark taken away. But it's what it means, I guess, to people in terms of what they've worked for and they've built up a brand or a business. Why would you just unverify someone at that point? And when you look at the criteria, it doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people. So there was a big outcry. When I tweeted about it, I was just like, I mean, I know it'd be crappy, but it's like, what the hell can I do? But they reversed course within 2 days. And I think what they wanted to do at first, what people think is that they wanted to keep verification for, like, I mean, like, grade A brands, or like, you know, NBC's YouTube channel, or, you know what I mean? Or like some media company, versus people like me, or people like Norm or Gerard or anyone else, or James, that have like actually built the brands and have a presence outside of YouTube. And maybe YouTube didn't realize maybe the amount of people that have done that, or just didn't care. But there was an appeal process. I didn't click on it. But from what I was told from our good buddy Ryan, was that it probably would have been something similar to how you get verified on Twitter. And how that works is you basically have to prove your case. You got to say, listen, like I would be like, listen, here's a show on Amazon Prime, Video Game Years. Here's a book. Here's some conventions I went to, you know, to show that you're something outside of just having a YouTube channel. And that's probably what it would have been on Twitter. So that means that some people, like, I could potentially have gotten it back, no guarantee, but maybe. And other people, though, could have possibly or possibly not have gotten their verification back. But it's very short-sighted to make a sweeping change like this without talking to the creators on the platform. And I can guarantee you they did not poll the creators on the platform before instituting a change like this. Like, small, medium, and large say, like, hey, is this a good idea? This is why we're thinking about doing it. Confusion in the marketplace, whatever. Now, I've heard rumors that they've done this because there was something being balloted about that some people interpreted the verification being that YouTube approved the videos, or it was like a tacit endorsement of the channel because you're verified, which is insane. I've never heard that ever. That's not how verification works. So, and that's not how it works on Twitter. So I don't know. I understand why people would think that on YouTube, that's what it is. So
they're not the same words.
No, it's not. And like YouTube's going to be like, oh yeah, I like that podcast video by Pat and Ian. That's what that check mark. No, that's insane. So I think this went off half cocked, and they got called out for it. And the YouTube CEO, what's her name, Susan Wojcicki. Top of my head, she even had to send out a tweet saying, hey, we might have screwed this up. And so they reversed course 2 days later.
So is it just going back to normal?
It's going back to normal. We recently emailed you about changes to our verification program.
Yeah.
Since then, we've heard feedback from the community loud and clear. We're sorry for the frustration that this has caused, and we've updated the program in response. First, if your channel already has a verification badge, you will now keep it. No need to appeal. We're grandfathered in. We'll still remove verification if we find that a channel is attempting to impersonate another creator or brand addressing.
Oh, good. So you're actually handling verification issues. Like, fucking okay. Amazing.
We've also clarified the criteria to be eligible to apply for verification. Like, in the past, channels that reach 100,000 subs will be eligible to apply for verification. I don't think I ever applied. I think it just was handed to me at some point. I don't remember applying to it. Twitter, I applied. Because unless you're like a mogul or a big company or a big celebrity, you won't get it automatically. But the thing was just given to me. I don't remember if it was around 100,000, but okay. To better clarify how channels will qualify, we've updated the criteria here. So you need to get 100,000 subs, authentic and complete. You need to be a real creator, brand, or entity claimed. Complete your public public profile, and you have an active channel that you're actually uploading stuff, and then you're verified. That makes sense. That's reasonable for all that. So here's the point: is that they have to go through public Discord in order to do the correct process. Like, they have to. That's what people are frustrated with YouTube about. I don't get on YouTube for a lot of the stuff they do in the past, channeling partners that maybe shouldn't have gotten partnered, things like that. But they don't seek feedback, it seems like, at the corporate level to do these sweeping changes. They just do them.
Right. They just roll them out, and then
they see what the fuck happens.
Every single time it starts a forest fire.
Yeah. Get feedback from creators, not just sit in a boardroom and be like, oh, we're going to do this, or I don't know. I've heard behind the scenes that YouTube's really weird. It's like really cold and clinical and engineer-ish. Where it's just like algorithms and seeing what people click on more versus like actually looking at the content on the freaking, you know, on the platform, which is probably why a lot of it's gone to garbage the last like year and a half, and why certain channels get promoted that probably shouldn't. So it's really strange how it's run, but I'm glad at least they reversed course. But this is embarrassing. This happens like once or twice a year with YouTube, mm-hmm. where they figure, oh, we've gone too far. We didn't get feedback. We're gonna tighten this up. So, but whatever. Yay, verified still. Yay, that's great. You happy, Ian? Is maybe Ian is going to try to get verified eventually because Ian has a slight announcement to make.
Oh, yeah. So I bought a microphone, which means that I can now do anything I want in the world.
Anything.
Anything.
You can be a cam boy. You can do whatever you want.
With a microphone, the world is your oyster. I can Nate Dogg on any podcast that'll have me.
That's in your contract, but okay.
Huh?
Unless that's in your contract, but okay. Don't go through that.
I'll be doing a video review for a game called Crossneak that comes out on our Crossneak Plus that comes out on the Switch on October 4th. It's an action puzzle game. It's one that I'd been interested in for a while. I'd been following its development. It's being done by Max Krieger in Future Memory, and I received a review code from them.
It's a puzzle game.
So basically, it's described as a Y2K aesthetic puzzle game, and it's initially what made it appeal to me is that it has a look that is very, very much like Namco and Sega's design aesthetic from 99 to like 2002. It looks like a lot of like the Ridge Racer design aesthetic, Mr. Driller design aesthetic. Like
it's very bright.
It's bright, but also very like cool and simple looking. A lot of lines and curvy lines and stuff. It looks awesome.
So it looks like I'm looking at it was a Kickstarter campaign last year.
Mm-hmm.
And can you describe the gameplay real
quick? That's where I'm going. I'm getting there. So
I'm training you for how to do a review right
the,
now.
The gameplay is so basically it presents you in the basic mode with a 6x6 grid, although you can keep expanding the grid up to I think 12x12. And there's three color blocks on the screen, on the grid at any given time, and you can slide them. And when you slide them, it's like sliding...
Like a Rubik's Cube sort of thing?
Yeah, like a Rubik's Cube.
Sliding a whole row?
You're sliding the whole row.
Okay.
So then you're sliding everything with it, and you have to create a cross shape of one color. And when you
cross shape,
yeah,
the whole one whole row in the middle, or
it can be anywhere.
Like one whole row, one more.
You could literally have like the furthest left and then the topmost row. It's fine. It's as long as it's an intersection, because it loops back around.
The creator kind of looks like me in the Kickstarter video.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Looks
a lot like me. I'm serious.
I should look. I don't recall.
But you say you got a promo code for it.
Yeah. Okay. So you make the crosses as fast as you can, and when they destroy, let me see.
He looks I don't usually say that, but he looks a lot like me.
Oh my god, Max looks just like Max Krieger.
Whenever people like say I look like someone, I never look like someone. I identify. I look like that guy.
Yeah, you
That's
do.
Really weird.
That's neat.
Okay.
All right. So, anyways, you clear the crosses, and it makes a nice noise, and you get points, and then. As you progress, you'll start noticing, like, locks will be on certain blocks. That means you can't scroll them off.
Oh, okay, locks.
Yes. You can't scroll them off the sides. If they have an X, you can't move them at all, so it completely locks up the row and column.
Go around it or work
with
them?
Yeah. So it gets really interesting and really, like, really difficult quickly, but it's fun. And my concern when I first started playing it was, is this going to be one of those puzzle games where I can lock into.
Pardon the pun.
Because at first it didn't seem like it was fast enough to kind of get into that puzzle game zone, but it very much is. Couple nice things I'll just mention real quick, because I will cover a bunch more of this in the video. Accessibility wise, it's really nice. It's flashy, but it does have it has multiple filters to tone that down if epilepsy is a concern. It's extremely colorblind friendly, which makes me so happy.
Yep.
Before every game, you can pick the three colors of your blocks so you can find the combination that works the best for you. Because I am colorblind and I don't fit into one of those nice... There's like two types of colorblind. Okay, now there's three. I don't fit into any of them.
Yeah, I don't fit into... I'm not red-green.
also, it's weird because I'm colorblind, but like none of those, like if you go into a normal video game and it's like colorblind options here, the three, it's like, no, I can't see shit in any of these. So it's all, it's very strange. So the fact that that's something that you could do was huge, because I love puzzle games, but stuff like Puzzle Fighter and Puzzle Bobble, it does get hard for me to track certain
different colors, patterns. Yeah.
So
how did CrossFit get in touch with you?
I was following them because I was really interested in the game, and I retweeted a bunch of times. Actually, they were looking for people who wanted code.
Oh, so they need to get the word out. So this is going to be on what platforms?
It's going to be on the Switch, Mac, Linux, I believe Steam? PC. Yeah, Steam. And it's October 4th for all of them.
And it looks like my long-lost brother is the one developing the game.
Oh, and it's like, there's a couple different things I didn't cover, like I said, I'll get to, but it's only going to be $7.99. It's, like, really reasonably priced for what, for the game, so. And that's that.
Cool.
That's CrossNeak Plus.
And there's your review. So, now I'm excited, Ian. Ian's going to learn to edit.
I'm going to learn to edit.
For his game reviews.
In the barest of ways. The barest bones.
So is this technically going to be an Ian is Happy handheld because it's on a handheld potentially?
No.
I'll do the theme song.
Nope.
You don't want me to do the theme song?
No, I'll do a theme song.
Wow. You don't want Pat's worldwide famous jingle skills?
No.
I thought people said I could have been a jingle writer, and I damn agree with that. I can write a catchy jingle, Ian. Come on. As Frank, Jingle, Flea Market Madness, I wrote a whole song.
You're a jingle jangle.
Wow. That cuts deep, Ian. Okay. That's
jingle
fine.
Jangle.
You know what, Ian? I'll record it on my own volition. I'll send it to you. You can agree to use it or not.
Maybe I'll chop it up and give it a remix. There you go.
Ian's happy handhelds. Happy handhelds. Something like that.
Moving on.
With some lyrics in it. You love it.
Moving on.
Okay.
So, let's start with a discussion, a lively discussion about the new Apple Arcade service.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Apple Arcade.
Because, like it or not, it has the potential to be big. I don't know that it's going to be game-changing. People aren't going to stop buying physical games. I don't know that this is exactly the future. However,
no.
I have an iPhone, so I decided so I will I. Try this. Why not? First month is free of Apple Arcade.
Then it's $4.99.
$4.99, which seems incredibly reasonable for what's on offer. I may not end up going through with it, and I'll explain why. However, off the top of the bat, it throws some interesting games at you when you go in and you sign up. There's a new tab, and it just says Apple Arcade. You click it, and you start scrolling through games. And fairly quickly, I started to see stuff that I was very interested in. There's stuff by Annapurna Interactive. They did the Sayonara Wild Hearts. There is stuff by Sega. There's a new Choo Choo Rocket, a game called Cricket Through the Ages. And okay. I feel bad that I can't remember the developer right now, and I'm looking it up because holy crap, I had a lot of fun with that, and I'm still not quite done with it. Cricket Through the Ages. It was published by Devolver.
So. Cricket the game or a cricket?
Cricket the game, but not really. Okay. You need to play Cricket Through the Ages. It's good.
Okay.
I'll get into that more in a bit.
Where's my Apple Arcade? How do I get into it?
Big Time Sports, Jenny LeClue. Like, immediately I found games that I was like, okay, this looks like fun. These are games that I would like to play.
How do I open the Apple Arcade?
So, I don't...
Oh, it's a tab. Okay.
Yeah, it's there a it tab in the App Store.
Okay.
So I messed with quite a few of these, and what I like about it,
Spaceland, ooh,
is this. These games seem to be fairly experimental. They're
sure. I mean, they're app games.
They're app games, and what that's a good thing. Because like Big Time Sports, for instance, is a modern take on like the track and field game style stuff.
Spaceland looks fun. Fast paced sci-fi tactics. I'm downloading it right now.
I downloaded a simple
sneaky
real time. Stellar is a sneaky or Stellar is a simple. RTS game, like you can basically play it with your thumb. Yeah, it's fun.
Did I download that? I downloaded about 6-7 games. I'll talk about. I played like 3 of them.
It's fun. Frogger. I had to download the new Frogger that was by Q Games. I love how it looks. It's simple. It's Frogger, but I like how some of the things like there's like the physics interactions. Yeah, so you can knock stuff over.
It's 3D, so you can go up like blocks. You can roll on a ball. You get a bomb you can throw. I was a little taken aback by, the only thing I was taken aback by was it auto scrolls very slowly to keep you going.
Yeah.
So when I pass by something, you can go backwards in this Frogger just like the original, but it'll auto scroll because like it was tough for me to figure out how to get up some of the blocks and over. So the controls would take getting used to. I think it would work better if you had a keyboard for me or a single button to be easier than the swipe for that. But it looks gorgeous. I live in like the sound design on it was cute.
I think the graphics are cute too. Like the realistic Frogger with the
Frogger
hat on.
Frogger needs a change up. You know, it's something fresh.
So I enjoyed it. And then
Cat Quest 2? Did you play Cat Quest 2? I played Cat Quest 2.
No, but I've played Cat Quest 1.
Okay. It's a little dungeon sort of.
Yeah, that's a rogue.
You have two cats and it's you get magic and you tap to attack and you like double tap to roll all the way of enemies. So it's kind of, it's
a
like
dungeon crawl.
Action RPG-esque. Yeah. I played a little bit. It's very cute. I can see how you can get into that. And then the let's see, what else did I play? The favorite one I played was Red Rain, which is like a Warcraft real-time strategy game simplified because it's not like it's not like you have all the options of a Warcraft because it's an iOS. So like in Warcraft, you go for gold and wood, right?
Yeah.
It's heavily inspired. So instead of creating grunts in order to not grunts workers to get that, it automatically does it. But if you hold on the wood or hold on the gold mine, it'll accumulate quicker. So it's a game of constantly holding on things to create new buildings and new units, attack units, and then forcing them and then directing them to the other player to kill their base. But you can then like hold on the group of party to heal them. But if you do that, you can't accumulate gold quicker. So it's all about multitasking, but you're not really multitasking. You're saying, what should I be doing right now?
Right, exactly.
Back and forth with your finger.
That's neat. So there's more strategy with the resource because you can accelerate a resource based on what you're touching.
Or you could click on a unit to heal them while they're going to attack, but then you can't accumulate or build a new unit. So it's actually not multitasking. It's single tasking. You got to decide what's more important at the time. It's actually pretty cool. For a phone game, it's perfect for someone like me. It's basically like Warcraft on your phone, but it's simple. I only did the single player mode, but you can then compete against someone.
A lot of these games seem to be very finely tuned for mobile. You say that. And
look how cute it is, the graphic style. It's Warcraft. It's adorable.
I'm going to have to play that.
Yeah, it's adorable.
So, I mean, you're thinking, well, of course, they're phone games. Yeah, but not all phone games really feel like they should be on a phone. The ones that I've played so far generally feel like they handle phone controls really well, some more so than others. It's nice, though, because I think any of these that are downloaded, most people could get into them if they wanted.
Sure.
Like, none of these are going to be overly hard to learn, but some of these do seem to add some depth. Now, to quickly focus on the game I've had the most fun with, Cricket Through the Ages.
I got it downloaded if you like it.
Cricket Through the Ages is a weird, comedic, out there take on cricket. I mean, not really. Basically, it just starts telling you a story. And it says, it starts with, cricket was created. And it's two cavemen standing at the opposite end of a pitch, and they're throwing rocks at each other. All the gameplay takes place on a side view with two players at each end. One usually has a ball, usually. The other one usually has, like, a cricket paddle, usually. When you tap a character and you hold it, they start rotating their arm.
Okay.
So if they have a paddle or a golf club or whatever, they'll start rotating it this way. And if they have a ball, they'll start rotating it this way. You let go of it, and they throw the ball. And there are some very vague cricket rules as to how you hit it and get points. But there's also intermittent rounds where you just beat the shit out of each other with your cricket mallets. Or your cricket pitcher turns into a soccer player and you're doing bicycle kicks. It's all this weird, like, simple physic mechanics, too. Because it's just hold down to get the throw or the hit, but then you can also tap to get your character to move. So some of the tournaments play loosely like cricket, where you're just trying to get a certain number of points. But in the ones where it adds soccer players, if you don't break their wicket with a pitch, if you charge at them fast enough and knock them through their wicket, you'll get a goal. You'll get a point
in
addition to whatever cricket points they're getting. It's very weird. It's very fun. It's fast. it would be great for two players, which there is two players, because you could literally just put the phone down and each person use one side of the screen for the tapping.
I just downloaded Skate City. Looks like a cool little skateboarding game, 2D skateboarding game.
I started Skate City. I gave up on it just because it seemed to be a lot like Ollie Ollie, which is a side-scrolling skateboarding game that I really like. And I was like, this looks a little derivative, but I will give it another shot.
I just downloaded Lego Brawls. That's an exclusive game, I believe.
It is, and I got Lego Brawls, too. I haven't played it yet because it looks very interesting.
So right now, I'm looking at there's about like 50 games.
And I played Spec. You would probably like Spec.
Spec. Where is that?
S-P-E-K.
Where is that under here? Spec.
It's a puzzle game where it puts like dots on a screen, and there's a dot that moves. And as you move it, what you're actually moving are like the vertices on a cube. Okay. So like when you move it, you're rotating this cube, but where those lines go is where your dot goes. So you rotate the cube and stretch it and pull. Basically the dot keeps moving along
It's like one of those wood puzzles with a ball almost.
It's hard to describe, but really good.
There's Assemble with Care, which is literally you're putting stuff together with like your like screwdriver, you're rotating things to assemble things. Like I said, these are games that to me, when people put down mobile games, they're not supposed to compete with a console. It's for like when you're screwing around, you're on your couch, you want to play a game for 10 minutes, or you're traveling, you're on a train, you're on a plane. Like it can coexist alongside. They're cute games that you would never see some of these games on a console because there'd be no reason. They're too simple. But for something like this, they're perfect.
So I've been enjoying it. My thing is, honestly, I've been playing them because I needed to play them to talk about it. These games are fun. I think people who are interested in this service are going to get their $5 worth, no questions asked. Sure. When I am presented with a large list of near infinite games to play, I will play none because I will have a panic attack.
But these are curated.
And I will play none.
But
these, like I said, I have enjoyed what I've played, and you know, we'll see if I keep it. My big hope here is that the developers don't get screwed with so many good games or interesting games at least coming out on this platform. You know, 100 plus is what they're saying so quickly. With lots of big developers, Zen Studios has new stuff on here. Sega's got new stuff on here.
Well, Sonic Racing's on it.
Square Enix, Choo Choo Rocket as well. Square Enix has got stuff on here. Like all of these, and then like big indie names like Annapurna.
I'm sure they're paid up front for it.
I'm sure, yeah. But I just hope that their work. My concern is I hope their work doesn't get lost in the shuffle because there's so much to try.
Well, if it's exclusive, it's Apple basically being the publisher and just paying them to do it.
All of these are exclusive though.
I know, but I'm saying if it is, sure. Apple's obviously pulling up the money to the developer to get it made, and they're just publishing it. So that's fine. That no one loses. But yeah, if it's a game that pre-exists, I don't know. Yeah, why would I buy some of these games separately, unless they're only a dollar versus doing a $5 a month thing. You know what I mean? Like, but some of these games, most of these games I've played, I can't see how they're free to, like Red Reigns, there's no free to play stuff in it. It's just play it.
None of it's free to play.
But I'm saying, like, there's no elements I see that even would be. So it seems like they really carefully chose these games to be on here.
Yeah. No,
none of that BS.
That's another reason why I'm interested in trying more of these out, is like that Lego Battles one seems neat. I'm like, I don't want to be nickel and dimed for it. I'm like, wait a second, it's Apple Arcade. Whatever I need to unlock will be unlockable in-game like a real freaking video game.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if like Red Reign is even available separately or not. I'm really curious.
No, from what I understand,
none of them are.
So while they may not be exclusive to the system... I believe that they are exclusive to Apple Arcade.
Gotcha.
Okay. Like, I don't think you can go and just get that normally.
Yeah, I want to play Red Reign against like human people. It's really nice. It's a nice idea. It's tougher to, like I said, it's not technically not multitasking. You're single tasking one at a time. It's a weird idea, but it works.
Now I'm going to play it when I get home. I'm sorry. I have to take a quick break to the boys' room.
Really?
Yes.
This is like podcast 2015. Okay. He's going to take a break, and then we're going to continue with the podcast.
I mean, it's just 2 seconds.
You can use the Apple Arcade while you're on the toilet.
I just have to pee.
Okay. Ian.
Pat.
They are steamy right now in France.
Yeah.
They're steamy. So... there was I think we briefly touched on this a year or two ago.
We did.
But never really got into the nuts and bolts of this. So Valve was hit by a lawsuit by a French consumer organization called UFC Cossier. Not Ultimate Fighting Championship. It's just another UFC, French UFC.
Oh, good.
So They sued because they wanted consumers to be able to resell games they bought on Steam. Mm-hmm. This is in the court system for 4 years, going back and forth. And the French court ruled in favor of the UFC Cossier.
Okay.
So this is interesting, because if the appeal doesn't go through, what that means that not just in France, all of Europe, because France is part of the European Union,
right,
this could have a cascading effect for how Steam operates, at least in Europe, in terms of how they'll take a hit. Because if I buy a game and go, hey, Ian, I bought this game for like $10, I'll resell it to you for like a dollar or whatever, so you can play it, and I don't have it in my library anymore, that would kill their whole ecosystem, potentially.
Oh, yeah.
Because then if you want to try a game, or me or you, I can just wait till I'm done with it. You won't pay full price. I can just sell it to you for pennies on the dollar just to get rid of it.
There would also be like a crush, a crazy crush, I think.
That orange crush.
Of people who had, I mean,
older
whose
games.
Libraries are just built up and built up, finally being like, I don't need any of this shit anymore.
I beat this game 3 years ago. I don't need it anymore. I'll just put it on the market for $2 when it's currently a game that still sells for like 20 or 30. Right. Say it's a AAA game. Say it's Red Dead Redemption or something like that, for example.
Right.
And that's a game that, you know, on Steam, it's still probably close to full price, right? It's only been out for, like a year? Not even a year. Something like that.
Red Dead Redemption 2?
Yes.
Let's find out.
So what if I say, you know what, Ian? I kind of like you sometimes. You didn't piss me off. You didn't fondle my ice cubes in the tray today. I'll give it to you for only $8. Are you going to buy it from your pal Pat, or are you going to go to Steam and buy it? You know, for whatever, $50 or $60.
I don't know. You are pretty weird about your ice cubes. I'd probably get it from you.
Yeah. See, so... This means the consumers win, Ian. Mm-hmm. The consumers win. Steam gets kicked in the junk. So what's going to be interesting, though, is that if this happens in the European Union, would that mean that would an organization in the U.S. sue, or North America? Would they say, hey, we want this too. We should have this too. And here's the precedent. It happened in Europe. Now we should have it established here in North America. Yeah. It's going
apparently
to be...
Red Dead Redemption 2 is not on the PC yet. So
it's not on the PC yet?
Nope.
Well, usually they take a full year for games to show up, Rockstar games like GTA games. But then they do the awesome mods that they look like photorealistic. You ever see those photorealistic like GTA mods?
Oh, they're insane. Crazy.
Anyway, then your PC just blows up or goes at one frame a second. So Val appealed the ruling. We disagree with the decision of the Paris Court of First Instance, like that, and we'll appeal it, a Valve representative said. The decision will have no effect on Steam while the case is on appeal. If Valve refuses to change its rules and post the court's decision to Steam within a month, it will have to pay a fine of up to 3,000 euros per day for up to 6 months. I think Valve will just take that and say, okay, we'll just pay that fine then.
Right.
We'll probably lose a lot less money doing that.
When I read that, I thought the same thing. I'm like, I don't know that that's like...
What's Pat math there? I'll just do real math. What is that? 3,000 euros times 6 months times 180 days times 3,000 euros. 540,000 euros. That's nothing. That's nothing to Valve.
Yeah.
Half a million euros. What is that, Pat math? Like 700,000 US, something like that? That's nothing. They'll do this.
Yeah, I have a feeling they'll just take the...
They'll take the hit?
Yeah.
All right, so this is not going to happen anytime soon, because, like I said, they can wait this out. They can appeal it. According to this article, there was the 2014 Australian court ruling led to Steam's current refund policy. Oh, okay, see, that's what happens. But Steam's the best! And then they started to go after the gambling ring, blah, 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 blah. That's still in limbo about, well... You know, Valve's not encouraging gambling, but everything's set up to enable it through their API system and having the marketplace. They're not doing anything to curtail it, basically. So, I think on Steam, I think I have like four games only. I can't even tell you what they are. I think the AVGN Adventures was the first game I got. The AVGN game. I might have a few more on there. But, do you have any games right now you think, I'll sell them. Why not? I haven't played them in forever.
Yeah. I've got a handful of games on there that I would get rid of.
Yeah. You want to sell them to Pat?
Yeah.
I wonder if they would have to impose, in order not to kill the system, they'd have to have a minimum amount, or like, so you couldn't just totally destroy the system selling things for like pennies. You'd have to have like, they'd have to establish buy back prices or resell prices that are similar or something weird like that. I don't know. Either way, the consumer will win here.
Yeah.
They have to win. And then
I hope to see it go through. I'd like to see it happen.
You'd like to see it happen?
I'd like to see it happen. But well, I don't know. Nothing ever seems to actually come of these.
Now, how would it work? Now I'm thinking out loud. How would it work if you're selling a game that's in your library that's no longer on Steam? Would they have to allow it be on the server still so that your friend
probably,
can download
yeah.
it still, probably?
That would be
That'd probably
guess.
Be the best policy, right? It probably is a policy right now. It makes sense. Because what if your computer crashes? You got to re-download it. Okay, Pat answered his own question. Pat's not smart. Okay, that's good. All right, so that's a good story out of France there. Good for the UFC K-Cosier. I want like a patch that says that. That sounds fun. Flex Pro Meals. We love the Flex Pro Meals. They're a meal delivery company that sends healthy pre-made meals to your doorstep. They give you epic meals, entrees you may have grown up on, but they make healthier versions of. It's part of eating healthier. It's a lifestyle change, Ian. It's not a 2-week gimmick. It's long-term. So Flex Pro Meals goes the extra mile, and they give you the most value with realistic and tasty meal options at a good price.
Flex Pro Meals offers a weight loss fat trimmer plan and a lean muscle larger portion plan. Some of their most popular meal entries are smoked brisket mac, breakfast burrito, grilled fish and chips, and the list goes on. Lately, I've tried some of the keto meals. Mama's Meatloaf is a bacon, turkey, beef meatloaf with provolone cheese in there.
Oh, I don't think I tried that one.
Oh, it's
is that
very
a newer
good.
One? Yeah, with the provolone cheese? I think I got the meatloaf a while back. I don't know if I had that. Wow, okay.
That was delicious. The Texas Breakfast Burger, which is a turkey burger patty.
Two turkey burgers for me. Because I'm on the
You get the bigger
beef,
one.
Beefy
yeah.
meal option.
Bacon, cheese sauce, and eggs. It's delicious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get your protein, you go to the gym, you know, you do your lifting, it's great. Intermittent fasting, I'm hungry. And then they have, you know, they're the staples like steak with potatoes. You know, if they got the veggies, chicken with sweet potatoes, if you want to just go simple. You know, you want to cut out the carbs, you know, you want to do that. You can get 8-pack for the summer. Summer just ended. Anyway, for 20% off your first tasty order, use code CUPODCAST when you visit flexpromeals.com. That's 20% off your first order of yummy pre-made meals when you use code CUPODCAST at flexpromeals.com. Ian.
Yes.
I'm excited, Ian, about a console platform on the way that's going to encourage family-friendly playing all in the same room with unique controllers.
So there's a Kickstarter up for what's being called Joy's Cube Interactive Gaming System with Hybrid Cube Consoles.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yep. So what these are, and they may look familiar, and I'll get into that in a second, is they are three cubes that have color LCD screens.
With a base unit.
With like a base unit that yeah. sits there. You can use anywhere from 3 up to 12 of these cubes, and the cubes have the screen, motion, and
clickability
and sense, yeah, and touch sensitivity, and they're being billed as a unique way to play games, something similar to like a board game and a video game combined, you know,
because you can pair them up together.
There's tactile yeah. feel. You can touch the cubes together to make a continuous path or to change up something in the game that you're playing. I believe we might have actually covered this, because this would have been, 2014. We may have actually covered this. There was a product that was coming out called Siftio, and it was largely the same thing. If we didn't cover it, I remember looking at it myself.
Siftio cubes, or I'm looking it up.
And it was essentially the same thing. It was a cube, these cubes with screens-based gaming system, where there were all sorts of different games you could play, and it all relied around you being able to touch the cubes to each other on all different sides to change up the board or the nature of what's happening with the game.
Wow, they first showed them at 2011 at CES. Okay.
These ones, though, unlike the original Siftio ones, as far as I can remember, these they also show being synced up to various consoles like the Switch, And I mean, I'm pretty sure you can do it with computer via Bluetooth.
Sure.
And it shows them being used as like just simple controllers.
Sure, because it has the motion tilting shift, so you can hold two and do, you know, different things with them.
Right.
Click on them.
It showed people playing with like Erector sets and using them to make like motion control controllers for Mario Kart.
It showed someone playing Street Fighter and like punching with it.
Yeah, which
like a power glove, which is cute. If it works.
Yeah, it's neat. The I have to be honest with you, I don't see anyone really making use of these as controllers. I imagine that they'd be somewhat limiting, just based on what you can do. It showed someone playing Galaga or Galaxian, and they're moving the ship by tilting left and right.
It's cute.
It's shooting by tapping another cube in their hand. And yeah, it's cute, but it's a novelty, and I don't think anyone's going to actually, stick to it. The game stuff, though, is... That's unique. It's an interesting way to look at maybe playing a different type of tabletop game. The mixture of electronic stuff and tabletop gaming has always been neat to me. I've always found that kind of appealing, although I don't think any of that stuff ever takes off. I don't know. My last thing is I'm not sure what the prospects are here. They funded it. I just...
They only asked for... $10,000 because it existed. Like you said, it was Siftio.
Yes, that's my thing. I think they have a lot of technology to work with, and I think this is more of a we're baiting interest
to see if we can build it up.
Yeah, to see if we can build it up. This stuff's not particularly cheap, though.
It costs. Let's see if to get the main pack. Let's see. What does that convert into U.S.? It's in Hong Kong dollars.
So the super early bird,
$121 for one set of Joy Cubes, and you get the system. Is one set two?
Or one set is three cubes.
Three cubes in the central unit.
And
the main system. Okay.
$121, that's on super early bird from $189. So that's not so bad if you're interested, but they do progressively get more expensive from there. They seem to imply that three cubes is all you really need to get going or get started, but you can do, there's packages with
six.
There's a package with 12, I think, as well, which gets kind of crazy.
Two main systems. I'm not sure why you need two main systems. I don't know. The Kickstarter video doesn't really... It shows games, but it doesn't touch... Like, this is what I'm going to say about this. It's confusing to me whether this is just a tech demo for something that could happen, or is this actually a platform that could exist right now. Because it says, like, okay, Bluetooth connectivity, possibility to develop new gamepad control programs through SDK, higher quality LCD screens and speaker versus the Siftio, which existed 7-8 years ago. Average running time up to 6 hours, redesign around the edges for control experience. So it's interesting that they're calling this a system. But to me, it's not a system yet, because you need to have all the nice little programs for it. To play.
Well, like, they have those. I think they still have a bunch from when it was Siftio. There's stuff there, but they didn't show a whole lot of it, which was odd.
It's a strange video.
Yes.
Because I couldn't tell if they were just tech demos or they were actually games.
So I think a lot of this stuff is neat, but I will be 100% honest when I say that the video was bad. It was not a good video at really narrowing down what they want to do.
What do you want this to be?
Don't focus on these being, you know, gimmicky motion controllers for stuff like that. Focus on the unique tabletop games that you have being created with.
So
these.
It says it comes with 5 games installed, and sold, and more games can be downloaded from the official website. Okay, now it's a system. Moreover, you will have the opportunity to create and develop your own game and share it with players from all over the world.
So it sounds like it's going to be open source.
So I would ask, looking at this page, what are the games?
They move very fast down here. I can't read them to you.
Like, what are the actual games? Give me a list. Give me gameplay of each of them and how the unique system, you know, makes it, you know, a particular experience that you can only get with the Joy Cube. And I don't see that easily here.
Well, portable gaming platform down here, it's showing you how it connects. I mean, it's right here. Like, for instance, the puzzle game where you connect the positive ends to each other by touching the blocks and they disappear.
Okay, that's on the demonstration. Or the production sample?
They just go down to where it says portable gaming platform.
Portable gaming platform.
It's just a quick animated GIF.
Portable gaming.
No, it's a headline. So, I mean, if right underneath the video.
Okay.
Keep going.
Oh, I see that. But, okay, is that actually one of the games?
Yes.
Okay, well, then show me that game being played more than for
yes.
2 seconds.
No, I
That's
agree.
What I mean.
Yes.
Because to me, that could be a tech demo. I don't know that's a... I'm trying to help out with the market. I don't know if that's the actual game or not.
Yeah, those are games.
Okay. What are the other four? They show... No, that's Bust a Move. That's it. They show this 3D shooter game where the guys were in VR. Is that one of the games?
Yep, I would imagine.
Code you would cracker. Imagine. Okay.
Code Cracker something. Llama game.
There's a rock, paper, scissor game, which is cute. I think it's actually yeah. really cute. Is that one of the games? Okay.
And it's showing more Bliss Bomb.
Island Hoppin' Pirates. Is that going to be one of the games? See, I was confused about if these are all developed. There's a Ninja Turtles one. So, no, I don't think these are all developed just for the system in mind. These are the ones that are just going to be compatible with it, that they figured out.
Mm.
I can't imagine a Ninja Turtles game being on board for a system this small. They went out to get a Ninja Turtles game made? I can't see what that Ninja Turtles game is. You see that? Ninja Slice? What is that? Is that an existing game?
I have a feeling it's probably... I mean, that's the problem with the video. The controller stuff is separate. These are all going to be games that make use of those screens on tabletop.
Oh, Final Slice. That's a game that exists.
Here's more down here. Demonstration.
I can play it on my browser. Okay. See, that's what I mean. It's murky as a marketing campaign because they are, to me, conflating slightly... games that are going to be on the system that they develop versus the list I see here of games that pre-exist to me. It's confusing to me.
Here's some good examples of stuff.
Okay, so those are the games you get. Okay.
Like that, so there's that.
So what they should say is that in the video, these are the games you get and
like
show you
that.
The games.
I like the spelling one.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's unique things going on here.
Cool. All right. I'm trying to help you with your marketing campaign, Joyce Cube. So this was a 3D robotics. They bought Siftio, right?
Yes.
And then it laid on the wayside for years, and now they're bringing it back. Or
yep.
This company is.
That's what it seems like.
So that's a good idea. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It looks kind of neat.
I think it'd be worth getting. I think it's a little pricey. Was it 130 earlier? 190? That's rough if that's going to...
Yeah,
for something
I
like
don't,
this, to
I
me.
Mean,
even the technology is cool.
I don't think this has great prospects in terms of selling stuff, but I also don't think that they're shooting for beyond what they know they can get.
Yeah,
here.
I'm kind of.
I see this as being something that gets used a lot in open source.
Yeah, and that's what they're hedging their bets on this video because half of the videos are them playing retro games with it, like playing Mario Kart or playing. Street Fighter or other games, and that's not how you want to present your product.
No, that's the wrong. I think that's the wrong way to go about
you
it.
You say this is what we want to do. We want to create a gaming
Show
platform.
Show us the games, not
what you can do with not playing Contra with it. That's not. I'm not going to spend $190 to play Contra in a cool little way with little cubes. I'm just not. Most people won't. They want to think of different ideas to do it.
That's my chair. Yes, it is.
You know what I'm saying? So
I know what you're saying.
Let's see. And then looking at the CPU, that they have the storage, 16 meg flash memory. Probably, I guess you can expand that. You're going to have to, I guess. A micro USB. Okay, USB connection. Yeah, how big would these games be, I wonder, now I think about it. If they're really simple, they wouldn't be that big. Probably. Mm-hmm. They'd be like app games, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Two AAA batteries. And a 1-watt dynamic speaker. Oh, cool. So the bass can talk to you when you're playing games.
That's neat.
So it's tilt, flip, shake, neighbor, and press for the little guys. The little guys have 4 meg flash storage. It's a lot in there, 4 meg. It's
ooh. Like
three and a halfs there.
Two grainy, naughty JPEGs.
Two grainy? No, a grainy, naughty JPEG would be like probably 200 kilobytes.
Yeah, yeah.
100
right.
kilobytes?
You're right. You can get a few.
Remember they would scroll like layer by layer on your screen, like in a news group or.
Uh huh.
It's like, all right, I can see a person forming.
Yep.
Woo! And this a nudie girl. All right, sorry. We're getting off topic here. All right. So I it'd be interesting to see what comes of a project like this. Like I said, this could be just getting interest. It's a project we love from Kickstarter, but it's not really on fire. There's 11 days left. There's only 98 backers on this. But they don't need the money, so I don't know what they're going for. Maybe it's just a future play. at developing the platform, I guess.
Yeah, like I said, just showing, hey, just, there's some
hey,
interest.
Hey, remember
here.
Us from 8 years ago? We're
okay,
back.
You're still interested to the tune of 10,000? We'll package these and ship them.
Yeah, okay. We got them. We got the parts laying around. Might as well recoup some investment on this. All right, Ian.
Patrick, we have a Patreon.
Do we, Ian?
Yeah, how do you get there?
You go to that good old internet web browser. You bring up the hypertext transfer protocol, /// www.patreon.com/CU podcast.
Over the river and through the woods.
To the Patreon house we go?
Exactly.
So we got a and Ian will do a weekly writing.
Yep.
He did a fine one last week. You got to start using Grammarly, Ian. Help me out a little bit. Just, it's a plugin. It's free. Anyway, I capture it. That's fine. I could.
What did I write about last week?
I forget, but it was fun. I did read it.
I don't know.
It kind of escaped me. Friday was a weird day. Anyway, so we have a Patreon poll. In third place, this is the lowest we've ever gotten. I kicked around for fun. What type of museums would take retro game donations? 5%. Nintendo turns 130. What past non-gaming companies would have gotten into gaming? 37%, which is really good for a second place. Sometimes that wins. And in first place at 58%, most memorable arcade moments. I guess that could be good or bad. Ian, what are some of your most memorable arcade moments you've had from yesteryear?
So one that I'll never forget was, and it's not like it's special. Well, it stuck with me. I was at a friend's birthday party in middle school, 8th grade maybe, high school, freshman year, I don't know.
Okay.
We went to go play laser tag, and there was an arcade there.
Okay.
And there was Street Fighter 2, Championship Edition. This would have been middle school, it had to have been. And I wanted to play, and I thought I'd gotten pretty good. And there was one of them older boys playing, and everyone was waiting in line to play. And I waited in line for like 15 minutes to play and got bodied in 2 rounds. And I took probably like 5 years before I ever went back and played fighting games in the arcade again. But one of my
something similar with that. Yeah.
One of my favorite arcade moments. There was.
Can I say my Street Fighter 1 before then?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so I have a similar Street Fighter 2 one, because when Street Fighter 2 came out, you know, I'm like 11 years old, 12 years old. It came out of Super Nintendo. What was it, late 92? I believe it did. Later 92. I think it was like early fall of 92. If only someone did a Super Nintendo guidebook can look up the exact date. So I got the Nintendo Power, which tells you how to deal with the special moves. I never played it in the arcade before. Never.
Okay.
And I think this is actually even before I had it in my hands. But I wanted to play at Spaceport in Woodbridge Center. It's one of the biggest malls in the U.S. So there was a line, and that was like one of the mall, dark, seedier arcades, where it was like as wide as there to that wall. It wasn't that wide, like 15 feet wide, but it went deep, right? So there was this grody-looking guy with his girl by his side. You know, when you're young, everyone looks old. He was probably like in his late 20s. Yeah, I remember him being kind of scary-looking. So everyone's putting their quarter up, and then so he was playing his guile. And I'm looking at I had the Nintendo Power on, reading it at the mall of my dad. I was really looking at the magazines before I, all right, what's special moves? Okay. And so I play, and you know, when you're 11, I'm not that tall. And I remember I could not throw a single Hadouken
on
that joystick. And how embarrassed I was. Like, I think I got like 2 hits in. And he was there, you know, he was big, he was thick. He was giving me a look like one of those that I lost. I wasn't humiliated, but like there was like 10 people watching at the time.
Well, that was the thing.
You know
about,
what I mean?
That was how it was at the laser tag one. All my friends were there watching, so it was like, hey.
So Street Fighter 2, I was right. I came out July 92. So the Nintendo Power must have came out right around there. I didn't own it yet, but I had Nintendo Power to read it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That mall had a Capcom World. That's where I bought it for $80 plus tax. Street Fighter 2. That's how expensive that damn game was when it came out.
Oh, yeah. It was expensive.
And everyone bought it.
My
look at those nice screenshots, Ian. Look at those. Look how nice that is.
Hell yeah.
I got every single fighter, because that's what Pat does.
My one other, like, favorite arcade memory was there was a Cyber Station in the Galleria Mall, the Waddling Galleria Mall. And I was there all the time in high school. All goddamn time, that's all I did. Just hang out in that stupid mall. And every Tuesday, the Cyber Station would just put one random ass game on free play.
Okay.
So I went the one day, and it was House of the Dead 2 was on free play. So I was like, oh, I know what I'm doing. I'm living my dream. I double gunned that.
Oh, gun. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I just stood there with both guns, and I was like...
Were you efficient with two guns or no?
I mean, it was... I don't know. I was all showy. I was, you know, doing all the stuff, and... At first, I was like, yeah, this is silly. I'm technically, like, I have two separate lives. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, okay, that's the health meter for my right arm, and this is the health meter for my left arm. And that's how I did it. And I just boogied on through the game.
And then other kids were looking at you like, can we play now? Can you hog the machine? Can I get in? Two players?
Tuesday at a Cyber Station wasn't exactly a thrilling day. I think that's why they probably put a game on free play, just to get someone
get
in.
Get someone into there.
But yeah, that was fun.
Cyber Station, that was the name of it?
It was a Namco one. It was a Namco arcade.
It was a Namco arcade?
Yeah, Cyber Station was Namco.
Okay. I never heard of that. Was that a chain?
Yep.
Really?
Actually, Aladdin's Palace was also Namco.
So that to you, like that's your dream then, just all Namco all the time. Did they have older ones too, or just newer ones?
No, they had like...
They had Pac-Man, Galaga.
They had some of the older stuff, but yeah, it was mostly... It was all over the place. Cyber Station. I want to see if that's... Yep, Namco Cyber Station.
Okay. Let's see. What was that Neo Geo game? The one-on-one frisbee game throwing at the guy?
Oh, Windjammers.
Windjammers. So, first time I played Windjammers...
Fucking love Windjammers.
First time I played Windjammers was with Peanut Butter Gamer and Friends at PRGE. I never played it before. I heard of it. And I was looking, oh, how do you play? Okay. And it was like, you know, it was a group of YouTubers. What's the other, not the Normal Boots, the other Normal Boots type of site? Is it still around anymore? But it was like, you know, some YouTuber guests there playing, you know, including one that likes to solicit picks from fans was there. And it was very competitive. And I was watching, oh, this is a really cool game, Windjammers. Oh, you can do lobs, you can do throws, you can do charge shots.
Specials,
I'm like,
yeah.
It's very twitchy. And I'm good at twitchy games. And I'm like, okay. Austin explained the game to me because Austin's a kind soul. You know. And so I proceeded to play and didn't lose. I'm very competitive. Ian knows this when it comes to video games. But I went...
Oh, yeah.
I went through all the people there at least twice to play me. And, of course, the one YouTuber was very upset about that.
What? which game were you playing?
We're playing Windjammers.
I mean, which character were you playing?
Oh, I have no idea which one it was. Well, those are like three or four different sets of people.
Six
different sets. Oh, I don't know. All I know is I got close to losing a couple of times, but still won. And I was a little joyous about that. And the one YouTuber didn't like that because the one YouTuber is an egotistical narcissist and didn't like that I showed him up, which I wasn't really showing him up. I was just winning, but he didn't like it. But so that made it even sweeter, the victory to me.
Yeah.
It was sweeter. But then I lost my lanyard, I think it was that year or the year before, which pissed me off because I had a bunch of pins on it. So that was another good one. And then just looking back at like just random experiences, like I remember going Point Pleasant, New Jersey, Barnacle Bills. People in Jersey going, yeah, Barnacle Bills. And it was the first, because it was like, you know, it was like you're right off the shore, mini golf slash arcade, and then like right down the street was like a nice ice cream place. It was like when you're a kid, that was the best thing ever. Even your eyes lit up.
Yeah.
One-stop shop there. And they had like the candy game cranes inside. But I remember going to Barnacle Bills with my cousin Chris, speaking of ultra competitive, and for the first time they had Simpsons Arcade sitting there.
Oh, nice.
So this must have been like what? Was that 90 or so? And I was like, you're like, what? Simpsons Arcade? And that's when Simpsons was like at its zenith. And pop culture was like 90. The Bartman shirts was like 89 about, you know, so 90. So,
I carumba.
And it was like nothing you had seen before when you saw Simpsons Arcade. It was like nothing. It was even, I'd say, even closer to the cartoon than like the Ninja Turtles arcade game.
It's gorgeous.
And they're both Konami. They're both great. But yeah, it was gorgeous. And then like they had the Neo Geo machines like around the corner. So they had like World Heroes and they had stuff like that. And they had like the two or four slot. So that was... that summer, whatever that summer must have been, like 90 or so, was the first time I saw stuff like the Neo Geo machines, and I saw the Simpsons arcade. I'll never forget that. It was at Barnacle Bill's. Like, they had even the newer stuff versus like the Seaside High Sport. For some reason, they got it first or whatever. And so, yeah, it was a great time. Then you get your ice cream cone from my nice aunt. Got me an ice cream cone right down the street. And then Chris made fun of me for being fat, probably. You know, but that's how he was. He was mean. He was a bully sometimes to me, but he loved me. We're good cousins. What? So, sorry. His dad used to make fun of me. That was really the dad. His dad was a bully. He was
an asshole. That's gross.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so... Made me cry once when I stayed with him.
Ew.
My Uncle John. Made me cry, Uncle John, when I was like 9 years old, 10 years old. Made fun of me because I wanted to put butter. Made fun of me because I wanted to put butter on my... I toasted my bagel and put butter on it, and he made fun of me for that. He said, no, you just tear them out and put cream cheese on. And that was the start of him making fun of me the whole time I was there and teasing me. And I cried like by like day two or three. Very traumatic. Very traumatic. My childhood.
Seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Now when I see him, I'm like, oh, you're just a fucking idiot old man now. Made fun of me, but I'll be more successful than you. Anyway, he was a snob. He was a yuppie snob, my Uncle John. Hope Chris isn't listening to this, his son Chris. But your dad made fun of me. It was not good. When I was 9 or 10, I cried. It was a shame to tell my own dad. Anyway... Any other memorable arcade memories? I got a good one. Speaking of Point Pleasant.
All right.
I got a good one. It has to do with Chris, too, because I spent a lot of time with Chris in the summers there. Chris had a house in La Valette. Point Pleasant is about 8 to 10 miles away. And so when you're a kid on a bike, that's a long way, especially when you're chubby, thick but quick Pat. You're given the sister's bicycle to ride, which was inferior. But... the Point Pleasant Boardwalk was the only place you could play the Star Wars pinball machine. It was not on the Seaside Heights or Seaside Park Boardwalk. We loved that game. So one of my most memorable experiences, we got on the bike. My ass was fucking chafing after that because the seat sucked. And we played Star Wars pinball for like 2-3 hours. And they set the... And I was pretty good at pinball when I was smaller. I was pretty good when I was like 10, 11, 12. They set the extra game so low, I don't know if it was by mistake, it was only at like 25 or 30 million on Star Wars Pinball. You got to be just decent to get that. You don't have to be great.
That's not much of anything.
Yeah, I think like the average game was probably like 25, 30, 40 million. So I remember playing one time for like 45 minutes, an hour on one quarter because I got like 3 free games in a row because it would just tick up to like, you know, 25 to like 50 to 75, whatever it was. You know, something like that. It would just tick up, I believe, or only got one free game. Either way, it would be like one of those things where you'd be playing the pinball machine, you get the free game, and then maybe get the extra random one at the end on top, and you get like 2 free games. So we played so much Star Wars pinball on like a dollar, you know, because it was still like a quarter only. It was like one of the best things ever. Plus, you're by yourself, you're on your own, you're adventuring, you're like 11, 12 years old on the bike. I love those memories, you know, the Jersey Shore memories. But not Uncle John, though. Not you, because you were mean to me. Because you hated yourself for whatever reason. Sorry.
Whew.
Anything else going on? I'm sorry I buttered my bagel and toasted it. You're going to make fun of a 10-year-old for doing that? An 11-year-old for doing that?
Whoa, Pat, we got a Q&A. We got a Q&A here on the CU podcast right now. From L Thrift asks, Link's Awakening versus Breath of the Wild, should both cost the same amount of money? And I'll answer that while Pat sorts out the rest of these uncle issues, because Pat hasn't played the new Breath of the Wild or the new Link's Awakening.
I played a lot of Breath of the Wild. I resent that. I played like 30 hours. No, I haven't got Link's Awakening. I want to because I never played the original because I didn't have a Game Boy. I just had Tiger LCDs.
It's my favorite. And I got it for Vani as an early birthday thing because she really wanted to play it. And I was like, I don't have money for it for me, but I'll get Vani a copy. So Vani's been playing it. It's gorgeous. The amount of work they put into just overhauling those graphics. It looks amazing. Yeah, it's a shorter game. I mean, it's a Game Boy game. It's probably 8, 10, 13 hours if you want to do everything.
Like side quests and stuff?
With a little bit of that, you know, finding all the secrets and stuff like that. But I the whole notion that it's not worth $60 because it's a shorter game doesn't hold water with me, or because it was just a Game Boy game. One, they put a lot of work into redoing it. 2, it's one of the best Zelda games out there. Definitely worth playing.
Does something different with the story, not just
does some yeah does Ganon something different with the story. but I don't. It drives me nuts when people look at a game and they're like, it's a AAA production. When they look at a game and I have to look at it based on the amount of enjoyment I get out of something. Am I getting $60 worth of enjoyment out of this? Yeah. Did they put a lot of work into it? Yeah. I don't think just because it was a, you know, it's based on a Game Boy title and it's a slightly shorter, simpler game.
But it's still a game done from scratch.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't need. No, that doesn't mean it needs to have its price reduced. I'm sorry. I think. Yeah. I think that's kind of ridiculous.
This is an anti-capitalist question. I don't like it.
Especially like, you know, when there are action games that come out that are, you know, 10 hours long. I mean, we pay $60 for all sorts of stuff, for all sorts of different games of different lengths and different depths. I really don't think them charging full price for this is outlandish.
Let's be fair to L Thrift here. So their reasoning is, well, Breath of the Wild was in development for like freaking 5 years. You know,
sure.
A long time. That's like a AAA, like GTA style game of development versus something like Link's Awakening. It was not 5 years. I don't know how long it was, but it wasn't 5 years.
Sure.
It was a couple of years, you know. It was 2.5 years. I don't know. So they're thinking, well, why should they cost the same? Well, it should cost whatever Nintendo thinks people will pay for it. I mean, I have issues with Nintendo for like 1-2 Switch. They charged $60 for it.
That was absurd.
They could have sold a ton of them if it was like $30. You know, they probably would have made way more money selling at a lower price. But they have when companies like this price things, the profit margin isn't only the thought that goes into it. It's how they want it to be perceived based upon the price. Maybe Nintendo could have charged only $40 for it, but they can't do that because then people would say, well, why don't you charge only $40 for future games? Or maybe this is a cheaper game because it's only $40. It's a perception when you put the price along with it. It's not just the profit margin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what goes into this. So if you don't want to pay $60, don't pay $60 and just wait until it's cheaper. I mean, that's what I'm going
to
say.
I guess that's my thing. I can't fault you if you don't want to. If there's another game you'd rather pick up for $60, if you know, you're looking at all these games and you're like, well, something's got to make the cut. I do think it's worth $60. I'm not insulting anyone who doesn't want to pick it up for $60, but I do believe they should both cost the same. Part of it is protecting the, you know, the property, you know, not cheapening the property. But you know, people look at old school games and modern games, and they sometimes don't see the value correlation.
The value!
But to me, a lot of times, and even this is kind of hard to explain or intangible, but when I spend $60 on a game, I'm spending $60 for fun. I'm not exactly going through all the options and seeing how many side quests and stuff. Am I getting that game? Did I pay $60? Am I happy with the purchase? And with something like Link's Awakening, the answer would be yes.
Well, okay, I'm going to go Pat Math on this. What did Link's Awakening cost on the Game Boy in 93?
With inflation, it's $53.75 right now.
Ian did his homework. Wow, Ian, I'm proud of you.
I'm fairly certain.
So it was a $29.99 game, you think? Not $39.99 for Game Boy?
I'm pretty sure it was $29.99. It could have been $39.99.
Okay.
But,
you're actually right there. You looked it up. So $30 in 1993 is $53.26 today.
Okay, yeah. Pretty sure that's what it is. So
really close. And if it was $40, Game Boy games are usually, what, between $20 and $40, right? This was a marquee title, so it was at least $29.99.
Yeah, at least.
We'll just say it's $34.99. $34.99 would have been $62, would have been more.
Yeah.
So we always forget about inflation when it comes to video game prices.
People always like to talk. I have this conversation with people at the store all the time, people who laugh about it. But, you know, like someone else might be in the same, like, oh, that's as much as it cost when it came out. No, video games now, on average, are cheaper than they were back in the 90s. Everyone's like, oh, they're so expensive. They always were, but your parents were buying them for you. Or you were buying a lot more used games. You weren't buying as many games when they came out. But video games were never cheap.
I paid $60 for Three Stooges with my $2 a week allowance in 1989. How much was that? In 1989, now I'm going to look, because now I'm mad.
Mario Kart 64 was at least $75, if not $80, in 90s money.
Thick but Quick Pat, who his Uncle John made fun of, paid $124 for Three Stooges from Electronic Boutique before tax in 1989. So, I mean...
So, basically, if you think it's too skimpy of a game to spend the 60 on, okay. But it's a really good game, and you definitely get $60 worth of game out of it. Plus, they did the amount of care and attention to detail into, like, redoing the art was just so good.
I watched Norm play it for, like, an hour on his Twitch stream. It looks fantastic.
It's amazing.
Having never played the original, it looks fun. And like I said, I like the fact that it's an all-new story.
It's cute. It's goofy.
Maybe Capcom could take a page out of that with their Mega Man series. I don't know. Do something different for a change. But it's a cute story. He's on an island, and he wakes up, and, you know.
It's a good one.
He goes sunbathing. Can you sunbathe in the game? I know you can fish, right?
You can fish. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can fish.
Oh, Ian's like, oh, yeah, you can fish.
Oh, yeah, you can fish.
That's my favorite Zelda game. You can fish in it.
I know all about the fishing.
Can't fish in Breath of the Wild, but you can fish there. Can you fish in Breath of the Wild? No, I haven't gotten there yet.
No, I don't believe so. I think Bonnie just gets fished by going out into the water and
catching
him.
Yeah. You hit him with your fist or your sword or spear. I guess that's fishing, technically.
Yeah.
You don't use a fishing rod, but you're fishing because you're getting fish.
Yeah.
Technically. So if you hit it like a fish with like a rock, you're fishing, technically.
You're rock fishing at that point. Sure.
Spear fishing?
Spear fishing. Gun fishing.
Gun fishing.
Tat, tat.
Or Crocodile Dundee throws dynamite into the water. Remember that? Crocodile Dundee 2?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
This is a weird podcast.
That's about that.
Okay. All right.
I brought Patrick some mini omelets. He can eat those shortly.
Shortly, you're gonna force me to eat the food that you just well, Ian. I'm running out of Flex Pro meals, so I might have to do that.
You know, whenever I talk about food, you get pissed I don't bring it to you. So this time, I bring you food, and now,
I'm not pissed.
No,
but I'm not gonna eat on Ian's terms. Ian's gonna force it down my throat in 10 minutes.
No, I mean, I'm just leaving him there. I meant because you're on your intermittent fasting.
Yes, Ian. I've been doing it for a year and 3 months, and it's fantastic.
I know. I'll never forget because you mention it every podcast.
Every other podcast, I mention it. Because we tend to talk about food, my mouth waters all over my microphone. That happens. We'll be at Portland Retro Gaming Expo October 19th and 20th. Go to retrogamingexpo.com. I will be at Retro Game Con in Syracuse at retrogamecon.com, and that's November 2nd and 3rd. And that you're going to have some nice guests there, some voice actors. You're going to have David Hayter, the voice of Solid Snake, is going to be there. Trisha Somerset, the voice of Zelda from Breath of the Wild, is going to be there. And others, the voice of Sapphire from Steven Universe. I'm not familiar with that. Our buddy John Riggs will be there. Our buddy Joe Granato of NES Maker Faye is going to be there.
Oh.
John Hancock's going to be at RetroGameCon. And the Wired picture that I can't stand that everyone's using on the site, there I'm going to be there as well from there. I look tired. I was so tired doing that Wired.
The one where it looks like you're deep in your feels?
Yes, I was just so tired. I was exhausted. Like the first half of 2018, I was exhausted. You remember that. It was a bad time. And there's Jax in the background holding up his arms. I wonder if he's about to take a piss next to Ian in the year.
He is.
Woo-wee! Woo-wee! That is a shame, because Ian saw his wiener. No, he didn't see
his wiener. I didn't see his wiener. I didn't see the Jax wiener.
I've been ripped. Anyway, sorry. He's going to a weird place.
Just fucking curling. Just doing curling. Curl.
It can do 25-pound curls.
It reaches up and hits the soap pump for him.
Get in. Do push-ups. Anyway, all right. That's it for the CU podcast. We will see you in a week. We miss out on anything?
Nah.
No, that's it.
Peace out.
We'll see you.